When you've got a professor on, you got to know that you get the class, and then there's that time after class, whether that's you going up after class and talking to that professor one-on-one in that classroom, or visiting the professor's office hours. Recently, on the Credit Union Leadership Podcast, we had the pleasure and the privilege of bringing on a good friend of mine, Dr. Jardine from Miami University. And similar to a classroom experience, we recorded the podcast, and then afterwards, he spent about 15 minutes with us, giving us some more details. Luckily, we kept the record button on, and so here's just some extra innings goodness, some extra credit that we're getting with the professor that we wanted to share with the awesome audience of the Credit Union Leadership Podcast.
You're listening to the Credit Union Leadership Podcast, a podcast that delivers value and offers up insight that'll help your credit union grow. ServiceStar has been consulting with credit unions for over 20 years, growing them in the areas of cultural development, leadership development, and management training. To learn more about what ServiceStar can do for you or your credit union, check them out at servicestarconsulting.com.
Let me take a step back. So we talked about learning, talked a little bit about hippocampus, amygdala, emotions, a little bit about dopamine, a little bit about attention, a little bit about motivation.
What I thought was interesting was when you said we want to activate the hippocampus because that's the center of emotions and it helps retain information. You said you wanted to use extremes, like really positive stories or really negative. So like when I hear that, you don't want to use neutral because it doesn't stick. So like the example I was thinking is we always talk about, hey, it's important to smile at our members. And like if I attach it to the story of, hey, a member walked in, they were all right. And then I smiled and they smiled. It's like, that's a neutral story. So I'm thinking, all right, for our learners who are teaching, you need to find either an extremely positive or extremely negative. And I think of this one when I worked at Chick-fil-A, I had a team member that had to take out the trash and they walked over and they're like, hey, I got to take out the trash. You mind if I can do this? And the guest said no. And my team member wasn't the best. They weren't smiling and weren't very understanding and still took out the trash. And this guest exploded and kicked the trash can, ran in and found me and yelled. And I think that's a great example of a negative story to say of the importance of smiling to create that connection, right? That's going to stick a lot more. But what I thought was interesting was you said we need these extremes to connect emotionally. But then when we talk about the challenge in their life, you talked about this Goldilocks middle. So there's so many different spectrums. So I wanted to talk about this. So our learners or our HR people or our people that are coaching team members, how can we learn to use emotions to connect with people and have them remember things? Or inversely, how do we present challenges in the correct or approachable way to our team?
Yeah, so I'd say first and foremost, when you're teaching and you have stories that are emotional in nature, it tends to lower the level of challenge. So all the different things that you can do to make the learning process easier, you kind of want to tap into. So when connecting and talking about different stories, using that tool of a narrative and then also connecting it to good or bad makes it a little bit easier for the people to learn. And it increases their bandwidth for how much they can learn and how much they can do at one time. And the more little hacks like that you're able to do at once, the more information you're able to get through in a single sitting. And one thing I'll say about this Goldilocks zone is it's very dependent on the person. Everyone has their own amount of information that they can take in at once. There's different cognitive abilities that mediate this. So there's things like processing speed, working memory, they're kind of beyond the scope of this. But really it's about learning is not about having a one-size-fits-all model. It's about developing it for a person so that you can get the most out of them. So like learning through kind of like a mentorship model and kind of like a smaller model is typically a lot more helpful than a large online class with like thousands of people.
Oh, that's we have this thing called like where we go to credit unions, the member experience builder. And what we do is we talk with their leaders and we say, hey, this is how you coach your team to be high performing organizations. And then after we talk to them about that one-on-one mentorship that you talked about, we bring the whole team together and we set the expectation by teaching a class on service or sales or diffusing irate members. So then everyone knows the expectation. That's the point of the big class. But what I'm hearing you say is the magic happens in that one-on-one because everyone's Goldilocks middle is different. And it's up to the mentor to learn that. Am I correct in hearing that?
Yeah. So definitely like when it comes to like optimal levels of learning, that's kind of what you want to do. But it's also about applying this in the workspace too, where you want people to be challenged the correct amount. And if you apply the exact same level of challenge to every single member in the credit union, you're probably doing a disservice because there's going to be some where that level is too high and others where it's too low and they're bored. It's about finding a place where people can be creative and can make what they want to make and feel like it's enjoyable. And it's not too difficult to be not fun and not too easy to be boring. It's about finding the right level of challenge for each person to get the most out of each individual.
It's like a blended learning model, right?
Yep.
So the more we can put into a training, the better it can go. Scott Andley, you got one more question I think that you wanted to ask Elliot before I ask a question that I can't put on the podcast, but I'm curious about Elliot's thought on it.
I think what we talked about right there,
that was good.
It was awesome. I think all that right. was some real gold of, we talked about extremes and using that to help. And I thought that was really insightful of what you said about, and maybe this would be one more question for us to discuss, is just, so Mike Neal, our boss, when he teaches, he uses a lot of stories to, and they're extremely positive and negative to help with retention, keep you entertained. Albrecht is like the analogy wizard. Like you could just say, hey, give me like 10 analogies to, you know, say how we can brighten someone's day and what that looks like. And he'll give you 10 analogies in 10 seconds. We've talked about negative and positive relating to stories. Does this apply to analogies as well? Is there a science to the difference in both, or do they accomplish the same thing?
Yeah, I imagine so. I mean, I think that the more ways you can look at a problem, the better. And the more ways you can kind of like connect different pieces, the better. So yeah, figurative language is a really powerful tool. I'm not familiar with its place in learning and development, but I would definitely imagine that it would be very good.
Cool. That's all I had.
So here's a question that will make the podcast. You're talking about the processing speed and the memory retention or memory load or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, what you're describing is a CPU.
Right.
How similar is the human brain and a computer chip?
Yeah. Yeah. So over the last 10 years, they're getting, or I guess maybe 7 years, they've been getting a lot more similar. So yeah, there's your processor, right, on your computer, and that's in gigahertz, how many like zeros and ones it can go through, right? That's processing speed, same idea. And then there's random access memory, that's RAM. So you have different sticks for that. And that's something that's called working memory, which is the ability to hold information and manipulate it. So like you use working memory when you're playing chess, you're thinking about one move, then well, the other moves could be that the opponent does. Where you're doing a math problem, you're adding all these things together, or you're using working memory when you're talking to somebody and you're thinking about what you're talking about now, but what how is it going to connect to the next thing you're going to talk about, and you're trying to remember something else, and you're kind of balancing that, which is slightly different than short-term memory, which is just like remembering stuff passively, like someone tells you a list of numbers for like for their phone and you're able to remember what those were, or like remember what a list was, right?
Yeah.
So that's how random access RAM and working memory connect. There's a lot of different connections. So like now computers are trying to be more based on what are called neural networks, which is based off of more or less the human brain, where basically there's a whole bunch of different individual what are called like perceptrons, like individual data points, and they all connect to each other and they learn. And this is where something in AI called deep learning is coming from. So that's how computers are getting better at like recognizing signs and It's the basis behind natural language processing and the new models that have come out with like ChatGPT. So yeah, definitely lots of similarities. There's a lot of differences too, but
yeah. We're not going to be replaced by robots, but it is interesting that the computer, a lot of what we invented there replicates what was given to us when we were born. And that's an interesting thing to think about. So, but most people on this podcast could care less about computers. So we won't include that in the podcast. That was just like one nerd talking to one nerd about other nerdy stuff and how it's connected.
I'm the metaphor guy.
I'm the analogy guy. It's kind of like a CPU.
It is a good analogy though. It's not bad.
That's awesome, man.
Also, there's a question about developing communication skills.
Oh yeah,
diverse stakeholders. I don't know if that's something you wanted me to talk about, but
yes, that'd be awesome. Because what I'm thinking is communication skills for two kinds of people. Like Albrecht's mentioned many times, a lot of people we work with or that are listening to this podcast are learning and development specialists, so they're doing a classroom setting. But also a lot of these people that are listening are aspiring leaders or people that just starting off leadership and they're working, you know, at the branch or with their department. They're on the front lines. And how can they communicate? Because those communication styles, they're going to look different, right? In a classroom setting and then more of a one-on-one setting. So I guess this would go into like what hacks, communication hacks would you have?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, this is a good change of gears. We've been focusing mostly on cognitive neuroscience, and this is where the study of communication and social psychology kick in. So some of the things that matter the most are focusing on active listening. So being able to hear people's thoughts and provide feedback and show that you're working together to find solutions. So it's creating this cohesive teamwork. And another piece is creating iterative feedback loop. So you get information from somebody, you work on it, you get more feedback, you iterate again and again. And what that shows your stakeholders is that you care about their opinions and you're able to make changes based on advice from more senior stakeholders. And that's going to come across very well, that not only can you bring in information, but you can change outcomes and provide like actionable quality metrics based on the recommendations that were given.
Can you give us like a real life example of both? So like you're a professor, right? A doctor, you teach courses. How do you do this? And correct me if I'm saying it wrong, but the iterative feedback loop.
So these feedback loops of communication to increase performance can be both bottom up. So that would be my students giving me student evaluations and reviews, telling me what to do, and me going through iterations of changing course material or ways that I'm providing information to them, which is extremely helpful, which I do. And then it could also be top down, where I'm asking the deans and the provost and those who are providing feedback on how to best teach and how to best do research and what I should focus on. And then showing that in the next year that I've made these changes and show quantitative differences because of the changes that I made based on feedback. And each of these are very good for validating the opinions of others, but then also showing that you're humble enough to be able to change your ways to improve, which is a very, very important quality.
Yeah, I think that's a very practical example. Because a lot of, you know, we teach courses, but we're talking to a lot of people that are creating the courses and teaching it themselves. So what I'm hearing is come up with some sort of survey or feedback loop from the people taking the classes to see how effective it was. And then also there seems to be like this peer-to-peer inspiration of, hey, this is what I'm presenting. What are your thoughts? It'd be as if me and Albrecht, we're both trainers teaching some of the same courses. And I'm like, hey, I'm thinking about presenting it with this story or doing this activity instead. And he could be like, well, what's another way to look at it? So that's what I'm hearing you like from what you do with the deans and what you do with your students. Is that right?
Yeah. So absolutely. It's just all about figuring out ways to improve over time.
What determines excellent service? Why is excellent service more than just fast, friendly, and accurate service? learn how to go beyond the expectation of our members in our service excellence workshops. These are live online workshops where member complaints aren't actually seen as a bad thing, where we go into the shoes of the member and identify why service is more than fast, friendly, and accurate. It's people helping people. By definition, service excellence refers to the ability of service providers to consistently meet and occasionally exceed consumers' expectations. In ServiceStar's Service Excellence Workshop, team members will learn why service is critical to the success of the credit union and how its foundational building block of the credit union philosophy, people helping people. Dates are already available online, so check it out at serviceourconsulting.com.